Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I am Jim Galante along with T. Frank Carr. T. Frank, how are we doing this week?
Doing well. We are here. By the time you're listening to this, Penn State has opened training camp, and we are 30 days away from the start of the 2024 season. But really, this is when the season starts. Once the pads come on and August rolls around, it's time to go. We're all in over at Blue White Illustrated, so come join us.
That is it. It's funny how the landmarks hit, T. Frank, and each one, we're this much closer. We crossed that 4th of July barrier. Then we cross Big Ten Media Day. Then we sneak into August, and it's right here. It's right here in front of us. It's exciting, a lot of fun. But the other landmark during the summer, how's this for a segue, T. Frank? The Lash Bash.
Yep.
The biggest recruiting event of the summer. Why don't you just first give our listeners the overview? Lash Bash.
Yeah.
What is it? What's it been like? How did it develop into what it is today?
So it is born of being on an island in the recruiting calendar. So June is an official visit period where players come to campuses across the country and they get to be wined and dined and taken on the all expense paid trip to where you're going to play football for the next 4 years, et cetera, et cetera. And then July is a dead period where there's no contact. You can't go on campus except for this final week where then you have one last week of recruiting before you get into training camp. So it's one last bash for you to bring in recruits, have some camps, get to know some people. And what Penn State did initially was what they centered it around the committed players and then the guys that they had targeted at the end of the summer to bring them in for a private Lash Bash barbecue, where it was just to, you know, make sure you solidify those bonds, make sure everyone is still on the same page, get to know each other, start the chemistry process of becoming a team before they get to school. But what's happened over time is that it's expanded. It became incredibly popular, and now it's another recruiting weekend. It's just straight up, this past year, they did something they haven't done before where they had two barbecues. Normally, it's just one barbecue during the Lash Bash. They did one in 20 for the 2026 and beyond players for the most part. That was on Friday. And then Saturday, they had the traditional barbecue with their committed players and for people joining the program. That's really the difference over time. But this is the last year that it's going to be in place as it is and has become, because the recruiting calendar is changing again and they're removing this final week of availability for coaches to contact players at the end of July. So we don't know necessarily what the future is, but it was pretty eventful way to go out, getting two commits for the class of 2026 in the final weekend of the Lash Bash as we know it.
Very good. And by the way, in case you're wondering, when T. Frank says wined and dined, it's just an expression. They're not serving the high school players wine.
This is not Germany. No, they're not. They're not 16 and allowed to drink.
So, officially not allowed to. All right, but you also mentioned that they have camps with it. How does this tie in? Because I think a lot of folks don't understand that you want to. Not just Penn State, but all schools, they kind of want to see the players themselves. It's one thing for them to say they run a 4-3. I want to see it also. And that's what the camps do, right?
They give you the opportunity to see for yourself all that information of and confirm what you see on film. There are guys who play lower levels of competition and look incredibly fast on film because they're running away from everybody. But high school is the least comparative level of competition that you can have. You have these elite D1 athletes, and then you have guys that are my size. So how do you figure out if a guy is truly fast or faster than his competition? Well, you need to have a standard set of measurements. And this is not just because of different levels of competition. This is also going into an extended database that helps them better understand recruiting in general, and having more information is always better. So that's the idea of getting these guys in to see how they move from a measurement standpoint, and also then just to evaluate them in person, see how they react. You know, do they move as fluidly as you thought they did on film? How do they compare to guys like themselves, you know, in competition? Anytime that Penn State can create competition, they're going to do it, because that is where, you know, a lot of these characteristics and traits are revealed. So it's a combination of different things for the 26 guys, specifically getting ahead of the curve, where you do a really good job, you're invited to the Lash Bash, you do a really good job, and suddenly you probably are a priority that Penn State's looking at in the fall, just in a couple of weeks when your film starts. And then for 2025 guys, most of the football players that are committed aren't going to be camping unless they just want to get better and work with their position coaches. But there are those guys from the 25 class that want that last-ditched effort to be on the radar so they can camp at Penn State and they can put up important numbers heading into their senior season, so that Penn State may take them, I don't want to say take them more seriously, but more seriously consider them a part of this recruiting class, which is finishing up in just a couple months.
So now with the Lash Bash, and recruiting in general has really moved up. You're getting players a lot earlier than it was years ago. I think probably initially this type of effort was about the current class. Now, yeah, most of the heavy work for this class is done, but are there still openings in the class of 25? We know that.
Yep.
How many were there class of 25 candidates still there at this year's Lash Bash?
Yes. And if you want those details, you can go to bluewhiteillustrated.com, join for $1 with promo code PSU1. Yeah, those some of those guys we talked about on the show. Coby Howard is a guy who's on the top of the list of prospects who are trying to find their next home and are still fighting for one of those spots. He's a Florida wide receiver that Penn State has been interested in. They had him up for an official visit. So, you know, his decision whether or not to camp at Penn State this weekend, all that information, all those conversations, we spoke to him, Blue White Illustrated spoke to him over the weekend. So all that information you can check out there. But that's one of those names of somebody who's trying to use these opportunities here at the end to put himself further into the take camp, into the camp of earning the offer, earning. It's hard to talk about it in a lot of different ways, because he has a Penn State offer. He was an official visitor. They need wide receivers, but then there's the question of, and I think it's pretty obvious from the way Penn State has recruited him, does he cross that threshold of what they're willing to accept from the athletic standpoint and from the, you know, generally what they want out of a receiver commit. So those are the questions they needed to have answered this past weekend.
Well, and this goes into, T. Frank, the more general question about having there's offers, then there's offers. Mm-hmm. There's, you know, are they committable and so on. And for some of the players, Landon has shared with us a story. I think it was with Alabama. He said he visited with his father, and they're talking to Nick Saban, and his dad asked, well, does he have an offer or not? And Saban said, you want to say you had an offer for us? Go ahead. You can say it.
Yeah.
You know, and so there's a big difference. So when, you know, a lot of times we read, oh, here's his offer list. Well, there's offers, and then there's other offers. Another aspect to this, T. Frank, and this is not that players didn't decommit before, but it happens so often now.
Mm-hmm.
There were also a couple players there committed to other schools, but if they're still there visiting at the Lash Bash, you got to think, well, they might still be available, might still be able to turn them.
Yeah, and that's one of those situations where you're never done recruiting. You're never done recruiting your own players, which is why you had the Lash Bash, because you want them to still want to be with you. And, you know, you don't want to just get the commitment and then move on and kind of like check it off a list. It's a relationship business. This is where Penn State does their best work, is keeping up with recruits and making them feel valued and part of the Penn State family before they get there. Those relationships are huge. So building those relationships with your own players and then forging ones that will make a guy who's visited multiple times this summer, maybe committed to another school, maybe committed to another Big Ten school, maybe interested in Penn State, who knows? You've got to find a way to, if you want that player, convince them that Penn State is the place for them. And so those are ongoing things. So, you know, until there's a final answer, there's no real answer to that, but it's all a part of the process of getting guys on campus multiple times and getting them comfortable to the point where it makes sense for them that they want to commit or flip their commitment.
And it's to the point now, NIL has become a part of this conversation, T. Frank, where it's, if the negotiating isn't over on NIL, then the commitment's not over. And I just read of a player, he has switched from Auburn to Alabama and back. Well, he's made four commitments.
Yeah.
Two of them to Auburn, two of them to Alabama. I'm not sure where he is now because
Auburn.
The latest is all. Yeah, that's right. Because I saw with the Auburn orange and blue. So he's gone through the four commitments, which is just amazing. And he's still got months to go before he signs. So that could end up anywhere. Before we get into the specifics, which I want to do, is the guys who have committed over the weekend, specifically for the 26 class. I've been very critical, T. Frank, of the recruiting, that this 25 class hasn't been what really up to snuff for a Penn State recruiting class. You want to see more. And the question became, is this a trend or a cycle? So right now, I got to say, it looks like just a cycle, because right now they're off to a great start for 26, aren't they?
This is why whenever somebody asks me and I said, yeah, it seems like there's a trend that we're following here in terms of speed is expensive for the class of 2025. It's only expensive if the players that are interested in you are also interested in who's the highest bidder. But if you have guys that are not necessarily interested in the recruiting process, you know, I know we're going to talk about Max Granville on this show, a guy who's got a longer view than the next 6 months. You know, he's a guy who's looking long term at his career and chose Penn State and chose to enroll early for those reasons. But if you've got a guy like Messiah Mickens or Kevin Brown, players that have ties to the program and are not going to be going necessarily to the highest bidder as their number one priority, you can build a great class. So, you know, it is, if there's one constant in recruiting, it's that there is no constants.
All right. We will get into those details when we come back for quarter number two.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership, with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number two. He's T. Frank. I'm Jim. We are talking Penn State recruiting. An exciting weekend for Penn State with their Lash Bash. A couple commitments for the 2026 class. And T. Frank, you say how often say that you're asked about the Penn State recruiting and the sky is falling. You know, Penn State fans are quick to do that. I'm the one who did that this go round. Okay. And it wasn't so much I was concerned with the class of 25 and the lack of stars. It was, yeah. It really felt like they were losing out on a lot of players that they would normally get. And I get how, you know, you even talked to me about it on this show. Hey, an individual player, he might be looking for playing time. And the tight end room at Penn State may not be the place you're going to get early playing time. So if you look at individual players, hey, pretty easy, rational explanation. But when you get so many of these players, you start to say, wait a minute, is this a trend? Well, Penn State kind of put me back in my place this week with some great effort for the 26th season. I just want to point out something very quickly, which I looked up and found interesting. I think there's a total of 4 players committed in the class of 26.
Yep.
I was looking at the class of 25. A lot of players that are, one service has them 3-star, another service has them 4-star, but there's only 2 players in the class of 25 that are consensus 4-stars. 4 stars from every service. In the class of 26, there's already 3 of those, T. Frank. To me, that's a kind of an indicator how well they're doing.
So I talked with Landon on his podcast, I want to say it was last week, and he was saying how Penn State, he was pointing out Penn State did not have any top 100 recruits in class of 2025, and then, of course, the comparison then becomes Ohio State and how many they have. So let's just go through 2026. This is the On3 industry ranking, so this is the composite, as you mentioned, of all of the recruiting services in a very early stage. So let's just say this again. These guys don't even have junior film yet, which is kind of that's really where a lot of this changes, is junior film and then junior evaluations from an athletic standpoint in the testing circuit. But the early returns on these guys, Kevin Brown is the 37th overall player in the nation. He is the 3rd interior offensive lineman. He'll play tackle at Penn State. Number one player, Jim, number one player in the state of Pennsylvania. Messiah Mickens, he is the 65th overall player, running back out of Harrisburg, 8th at his position, so 2 top 10 players at their positions. Number 3, Jim, number 3 in the state of Pennsylvania, so 1 and 3 off the board. And then Troy Hune, a quarterback out of California, 76th overall, top 10 at his position, and 12th in the state of California. So they have 4 players in the top 100 already, and then Jasir Rogers has not really been evaluated. He was an off-the-radar candidate, but the internal testing, the things we've talked about over at BlueWhiteIllustrated.com, this is a guy who ran in the 4.3s, ran a 4.3s at Penn State camp. So that is impressive. That's a guy who, and you put on the film, he is not a small guy for a 5'10 receiver. This is a very promising class. So in a lot of ways, it's the mirror image or the reflection of what they didn't necessarily do in the class of 2025, where they get the top in-state offensive tackle. They get the top quarterback, not maybe their top option, but a guy in their top grouping of quarterbacks when it's still very early in the decision process, where, you know, you've got a lot of different tools and traits that can develop over time. And Troy Hune, 6'4", 205, has a lot of, with a howitzer for an arm, a lot of different potentialities in this particular group. So a very strong group so far, and they have to keep going. They have to continue to add a roster of depth at hard positions to get, like defensive tackle, cornerback, receiver. But right now, they are the 2nd ranked team in the class of 2026 in the team rankings. So there you go.
Well, a couple things. First of all, I'm going to have a bone to pick with Landon Tengwall unless he gave me credit. I'm the one who did that comparison of top 100 players.
So, okay.
And I shared that with Landon. So actually, I guess I should be flattered that he's taking my information. But I'll deal with Landon later this week. Anyway, but you emphasize, hey, Jim, you know, top 10 class in Pennsylvania. And I appreciate you saying that, because you're right. That's where I was critical of Penn State missing out on so many of the top Pennsylvania players in the class of 25. And T. Frank, the other thing that I was critical of, speaking of top 100 in the country players, yes, I'm the one who said in class of 25, I didn't see those elite players.
Right.
Again, it's nothing against the players that they're bringing in who might turn out to be really, really good. But give me the really good ones that everybody says is really good and is a top 100 player. You know, I think it was Ohio State. I think the number is they had 10 top 100 players. They also had three top 10 in the country players in their class of 25. So this class of 26 looks really good. And the one player, as you said, hasn't been evaluated, Justin Rogers from Delaware. He has the trait, T. Frank, that you talked about being so expensive in the class of 25. I saw that 4.3 and my eyes lit up.
Yeah, and so you've got a the reversal of what we saw this past season. So the cycle that I think we were all looking at, and if you're a Penn State fan, you maybe were freaking out about, or you were concerned, and we were talking about this conversation of, is there a potential cap on Penn State's recruiting because of NIL? And two things could be true. Again, we don't know just now. I'm not saying any of the players they have currently are going to decommit, but four players don't make a full class. They have to continue to add players, and these players can have to continue to develop. But it would seem that the trend of NIL being a limiting factor for Penn State is not a year-on-year compounding factor as NIL matures, or, Jim, Penn State's approach to NIL has changed for the class of 2026. We don't necessarily know any of those details as far as which one of those it is. You look at the guy when they committed. You know, Kevin Brown is committing incredibly early, especially for a guy who has the potential to be a five-star offensive lineman. He's maybe a guy that recruiting doesn't necessarily interest him. And then you have Messiah Mickens, who committed even earlier than that, and who also has this the potential to be a top five player at his position in the class of 2026, who has been a massive recruiter and bonus for Penn State. He is up at the in Happy Valley all the time. I saw him all of June. So this is a guy who seems like he's committed to not only being a part of the class, but recruiting for the class. So that's a strong start, again, for them, for those in-state guys that you feel like you need to develop those relationships with and keep them from looking elsewhere from that NIL perspective. It feels like Penn State has a strong start for an individual unique, I don't say unique situations, but what we talked about, finding guys that fit Penn State that are more about the game, development, and a long-term view of projection to the NFL, as opposed to how big is the bag when I get there. So then you just got to keep building on that and hope you get lucky with more guys like that. Or Penn State is joining the race. I don't know. Sitting here right now, this is all a story that's unfolding.
And I like that you say it's possible for multiple things to be true. It could be that these are players who are more interested in things beyond how big is the bag of money that you're going to get. And the second part of this is it could very well be I believe James Franklin is the guy who identifies when he has an issue and then says, okay, what do I have to do to fix it?
Yeah.
I would not be surprised if he looked at what was going on with the class of 25 and said, we got to do something about this.
Yeah.
And he and the staff and the collective and everybody put something together and they're just doing better at it.
It could be. Yeah. And so there's also, let's look at this in a longer term projection, because this is something that from a informational standpoint, to understand the full picture, you do need years of information. I always say, like, you don't get good football players out of the box most of the time because it takes a long time to learn football at the level you need to if you're going to be great at it. And freshmen just haven't necessarily had that exposure. You just need that time. So we need time to understand the picture. So let's just take offensive line. And let's take the last year, Michael Carroll not committing to the program. Huge problem for Penn State. But if we look at this in a longer-term view, Javon Williams, a five-star offensive lineman from Pennsylvania, committed to Penn State, committed to Penn State early. Cooper Cousins, a five-star offensive lineman from Erie, commits to Penn State super early, and becomes a huge part of that class. Michael Carroll, they miss on. Kevin Brown has committed to the program. So over the last 4 years, they've gone 3 for 4 on five-star offensive linemen in the state of Pennsylvania. So not only are there guys with that level of talent, but they're also guys who have, they've been able to get into the program. So I just think it's interesting for a trend from Pennsylvania. And then if you look at the actual body of work from Phil Troutwine, that's really impressive. That's a really impressive group of players.
And T. Frank, I think the one, you express that very well. And typically, you can, with recruiting especially, you can't jump to conclusions for 1 year. Like I did. I realized that's what I did, T. Frank.
Yeah.
But it, the thing about recruiting in the last couple of years is it has changed. It is very, very different right now with NIL. And I think it, what is this, about the third year of recruiting with NIL, third or fourth year? And
yeah,
the first year or so, I don't think it was that big a deal. But it has increased in importance. And I think this season we're seeing the most. And when we look at the cycle and, you know, 10 years from now or even 5 years from now, when we look back, we may look at the class of 25 as the biggest NIL factor class, because we're also going to have another big change with that 20-some million dollars that the schools are going to be able to pay the players directly. So yep, it's going to be different all over again in another year.
Yeah. Yeah, and so the these are all, because the rules keep changing and because there is no consistency in college football, you're going to have these years that need context. And also, it is, right now as we're recording, the end of July. The class does not sign until December, and then it's not fully finished until February of 2025. So there is time for Penn State to recalibrate and reattack the class of 2025 players that they missed on. So there are opportunities. Even this story is not over yet. So that is, I think, also the important context we have to leave this conversation with, is they have time it to make this story, when you look back at it in 10 years, a different one than the one we sit here in the middle of it right now.
What I appreciate, T. Frank, is when you're saying that, you're talking directly to me, not to listeners, which I appreciate. All right, stick with us. Quarter number three, and ask T. Frank.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, general manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership, with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number three. That means it's time to ask T. Frank. We're taking your questions for T. Frank. And if you want to send one in, all you got to do, download our app, Keystone Sports. You'll see the Ask T. Frank button. And there you go. Speaking of recruiting in NIL, let's start with Henry from Scranton, T. Frank. And he actually, he calls me out, T. Frank. Jim has expressed quite a bit of concern over the 2025 recruiting class. Actually, T. Frank, I appreciate he's not saying Jim is panicking. He just said,
right, Jim not has editorializing.
Yes, quite a bit of concern. So I like the way you phrase it, Henry. I'm just expressing concern. Are you, T. Frank, as concerned, and how much of the issue is NIL?
So, Jim, you're not wrong. Like, they have missed on important players and guys. When you look at the how the class could have been put together at this point, if they had those players, it would be an elite group of regional talent and some national flavor. So you have the right to be concerned. I have concerns if you're looking at some of the, we've talked about this, some of the high-end athletic potential in this class. They do have guys that are underrated at this point. Again, we'll go through Owen Alessini. You have Lyric Samuel, Braswell Thomas. There are guys in this class that have really standout athleticism that are not, that are kind of under the radar guys that haven't been nationally prominent. But Matt, like, somebody asked me, what's the number in a class that you should have, Henry? And I don't really know. I don't know that there's a number of underrated players that you can have in a class that, you know, secret superstars that are going to blow up when they get to college and be dominant players at their positions. But you definitely don't want it to be half of a class. And, there was, I think I counted up at one point, you could say 10 of the 18 players in the class had some sort of positional difference for their recruiting that made them maybe a little undervalued, or they were guys that Penn State, the opinion on was higher, or their testing numbers were higher than where they're ranked. You definitely don't want it to be half, but you don't want to only chase stars, right? So you need to have some sort of balance there of the what you feel confident and secure about, and then some of those upside plays. The class of 2024, I think, was a great example. You look at a defensive tackle, and they took some massive swings at upside in frame, athleticism, some of the other positions in the class of 20. I called the class of 2020, I think it was 2024, I called that the all-frame class because there were so many guys with big athletic profiles that could develop, or, you could miss on those guys. So I think if you've got four or so of these guys in your class that are development superstars, that maybe is a good number. Maybe you push that a little bit higher, but in the class of 2025, it feels like it's a disproportionate number of those guys that are underrated that Penn State has a higher value of, and that does raise some concern about what is the overall ceiling of this group. None of these kids are guarantees, but some of them have more traits that make you feel better about their transition and make you feel more confident and lean more towards the positive. We're generally positive about them anyway because they're high school football players, and you shouldn't be like a jerk about it, but you do have a certain level of, I feel a certain level of responsibility to bring them in with an understanding of context, right? And an understanding of here are the avenues of development, and maybe the final product isn't a first round draft pick, but a really good football player or whatever those things are. So there are concerns that you're missing some of those guys that are like, hey, the ceiling here is exceptional and the floor is not bad either. But like we said, the story's not written yet. Star Wars wouldn't have been so unbelievably impactful without the Empire Strikes Back, without the dark middle where everything goes wrong and the heroes look like they're on the brink of the end. You can't have a great story without that arc. So we're in the middle of that, if you want to make that comparison, in the class of 25, where they have to fight their way to victory, and we'll see if they can. And if not, it ends differently than that.
Yeah, T. Frank, we've been doing this show about 8 years. I believe that is the first Star Wars analogy to recruiting classes. And I want to point out, though, also, in the big picture with the recruiting, there's only a handful of five stars, and then there's hundreds of four stars. So the level, that's why I think a better measurement is, top 100 players versus the 30 guys or so who are, five stars. So to me, the elite is the top 100. And if I do my math correctly, T. Frank, there's only 100 of those guys who are top 100 players.
I'd say the top 150, I'd push it a little further because there are, a guy like Max Granville, who I think has unbelievable potential at Penn State. I think he was 167. So that's a guy who is not going to be in the top 50 because he's 6'3", and some schools looked at him as a linebacker, but at Penn State, he can be the next Chop Robinson from a talent perspective, and that's a first-round draft pick. So there are guys even outside of the top 100 that have traits or things that maybe they, from a projection of the NFL perspective, they don't have all of the tools, but they have all of the traits to be elite players of their position.
That is fair enough, T. Frank. However, you ruined my example.
Sorry. 100's a round number. It's pretty. I get it.
Okay, backtrack. But Saquon Barkley, I think, was like 105, in his class. And I look at the class of 22 for Penn State as just the great recruiting class. But there were guys like Abdul Carter, KJ Winston. They weren't, top 50. I'm not even sure they were top 100 players. I don't think they were. But you also had Drew Aller, Nick Singleton, I think Deni Dennis Sutton, guys who were top 100 players. You had this fantastic mix of guys who I'll put in that elite category who I never want to say sure thing, but they were pretty good bets, along with guys who, Penn State, good eye for talent, brought people in. So to me, that was the great class. that you want to emulate and reach, and it didn't look like that was the case in 25. All right, let me move on, T. Frank. Let's go to Ken in Hanover, who says, I was a huge Manny Diaz fan, but I still think the defense is going to be really special with Tom Allen. Do you agree?
Yes. Yeah. I have some questions about how he's going to operate the defense. There is this push and pull of you don't want him to be Manny Diaz. You didn't bring him in to run, hey, run Manny's defense. Do what is natural to you. But what is the overlap and what can you incorporate? Here are some ideas. If you're a creative, intelligent person, you can understand somebody else's thoughts and adapt them to your own. And that's kind of the idea of Tom Allen, Manny Diaz, and the overlap from a style point anyway. Diaz was more about pressure fronts, creating tight windows through timing, where there were a lot of times Penn State faced a lot of three-man routes because you had to keep everybody in to block. Like, he used the blocking rules for the offense in order to limit the amount of routes and limit the amount of areas where you can target on the football field to predict where the football is going to go and then attack that area, create those sacks, turnovers, interceptions, try and make the quarterback hold the football. Tom Allen has been, in his time, more traditional, blitzing from standard alignments with linebackers 4 yards off the ball, using crazy coverage rotations to surprise quarterbacks with what's coming at them. So what is at Indiana and staying at Indiana, because he doesn't need it anymore, because you have guys up front that can do more, and what is, I believe in this, I need this as part of my defense, that's the part I can't tell you. You know, I'm not at practice. I don't know necessarily what those conversations are, but I can see him co-opting some of the concepts or some of the situations from the Penn State defense. You know, just this is what we've run during the last 11 years. I can absolutely adapt that. And I think that's a part of the conversation of what we're going to see as how do they hit the ground running? How do they make this an easy transition? And then how does it evolve over time? Because even Manny Diaz's defense was different from week 5 of the 2022 season to the end, and then the next year through the end of the 2023 season. So these things evolve. Good defensive coordinators, good offensive coordinators have to evolve and have responses to their own ideas to counter the counter from the opposing side of the ball. So we'll see this defense evolve on its own too.
I like this question from Ken, because I agree, this is something I would say, because I've been such a huge Manny Diaz fan, and part of why I liked him so much is he did unique things with the defense.
Yes.
And the conversations, what we've heard, you know, James Franklin talk about Tom Allen and his Indiana defenses, and what I've learned from you, T. Frank, of what Tom Allen has done, it sounds like he's done some special things, but not necessarily the same as Manny Diaz, which is fine.
Manny Diaz also didn't do what he did at Penn State anywhere else at the level he did, because he didn't have the talent that he did. Miami, he could not recruit to the level that he did at Penn State, where he had an Abdul Carter and a Kobe King and a Kalen King and a KJ Winston. He didn't have that collection of superior talent anywhere else for long enough for it to develop and hit where he could have a top one or two defense. He was always a creative guy who did a lot of interesting things and was a very, very good defense coordinator. But the way we think about Manny Diaz coming out of his time at Penn State is very different than the guy who got fired at Miami. There's a lot that goes into that. We don't need to get into the politics of that, but a guy who did not have the same level of success in the defense there, because he didn't have the same level of pressure and defensive players up front. So we need to have this level of understanding that the story with Tom Allen is yet to be written with that Penn State defense behind the mind, the creativity. He can create something maybe different, but also impactful with these players, because that's something we didn't see him do at Indiana or any of his other stops, is have top 10 talent on his defense.
That's going to be fun to watch, T. Frank. Let's get real quickly to Matt in Gettysburg, who says, there was talk at the Big Ten Media Day about using Bo Prabula. This seems to me like typical preseason talk. Do you actually see a significant use of Prabula, and how so?
Yes, I see Bo Prabula having a role in the offense. Now, let's have the context conversation, and I'm going to use it with a less emotional connection. six offensive linemen. I wrote about this over at BlueWhiteIllustrated.com. In 2022, Penn State used six offensive linemen 13 times, but it felt like a big part of the offense because it was the T formation. People don't remember Bryce Effner was the tackle eligible on the right side where he was playing tight end, and then you had two tight ends on the field. Penn State did not have that in 2023, and then it kind of disappeared, like they stopped using it. Could they bring it back this year? But it was 13 plays. That's my point, is it felt very impactful. So if there's a Bo Prabula package, I believe there will be. I believe that Andy Kolnicki is going to use that. But how big? I don't think it's going to be massive.
Very good, T. Frank. That's it for quarter three. We got another quarter to go. Stay tuned.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's T. Frank. I'm Jim. We're talking Penn State, very specifically Penn State recruiting, last bash last weekend. And T. Frank, I promised to do this. Let's do it. Let's get into some analysis of the players. We've mentioned their names a little bit, but two commitments for the class of 26 this past weekend. Let's start out with Kevin Brown, four-star offensive lineman, 6'5", 270, consensus top 100 player in that class. Again, he's from Pennsylvania, as you pointed out to me, T. Frank. This is Penn State getting... What is he, the number one player in Pennsylvania for 26?
The number one player in the state of Pennsylvania, according to On3 and Rivals, but he's no lower than third by any other recruiting service. So this is a guy who's very, very good.
Tell us about him.
So he's 6'5", 265, 270, somewhere in there. The point, and if you want to check out some of his highlights, we put those out over the summer where Ryan Snyder's gone to a bunch of camps where Kevin Brown has been at, and we've seen him work. He is a guy who's building himself the right way. Some guys come out of the box big and then have to learn how to use all of those traits and size things. And then you have guys who are very athletic and develop over time. And that's what you have with Kevin Brown, a guy who's been super athletic, who has a dad who played offensive line. So he's been taught the right way from the ground up. There's no issues with how he's being developed, because it's all being done the right way progressively over time. So this is the guy who is 225 or 230. Suddenly we see him the next year and he's 250 and it's all lean muscle. And then, you know, maybe next year he'll be 275 when he enrolls at Penn State. And suddenly he's, you know, 305 and it's all exactly how it should be. And there was no time wasted on tearing down to build back up. So you've got Kevin Brown as this very, very, very athletic offensive lineman with a good frame. Maybe not, you know, so if we're comparing him to some of these other guys from a, and I'm saying purely size, from how long his arms are to his height, not how he's built from a weight perspective. He's more on the Javon Williams side of things, where he's quick enough and athletic enough to be an offensive tackle. But if you were to say, like, I'm building a tackle in the lab, he is not 6'6" with 39 inch arms. He's still kind of on the smaller side, if that is a word that's appropriate in this situation, but still a player that projects as a top 32 player in the nation right now in his development process. So I guess I'm saying that to say he's that good. He can be a five-star offensive lineman. He is, you feel as good about him as you can about any player in offensive line in high school. But if other guys who have those traits develop, he might over time naturally slide down the On3 rankings or the 247 rankings because he doesn't have those length traits. That doesn't mean that his athleticism and his testing and all those things aren't top of the top where he can be that five-star offensive lineman.
Well, and also, T. Frank, I think it's worth pointing out when we see someone who's committing now for the class of 26, he is just going into his junior year of high school.
Yep.
He's not done growing. Okay. He's listed at 6'5". He may end up 6'6".
That's what happened with Michael Carroll. That's exactly what happened with Michael Carroll. Suddenly, as a junior, he was 6'6", 305 pounds, and you would say he was an interior player at first, and he's still ranked that way. But when you're 6'6", and you move the way he does, yeah, that's how that can work. I don't know. We just don't know with Kevin Brown what his development curve looks like from that particular perspective. I wouldn't say he's going to end up being somebody who has all of those traits. I think he is kind of not a finished product, because that's the whole point of this. But, you know, he's been kind of consistently this size for 2 years now. Maybe he has maybe those genes turn on late and he has a second growth spurt. But I'm not trying to put false hope in fans' minds about what is and isn't. It is a possibility, but it's not something I'm expecting in his development process.
But my understanding is his 270, and you even put it's a very good 270, and he worked well.
Just look at the photos of him. Like, look at the photos of this kid on the internet. He is like, he's got guns. He is chiseled from head to toe, and he's 270. So that's what you're looking for. You want those guys that have the mobility, the athleticism. And I'll tell you something about him early on. He's a very strong, very, very strong. There's some comparisons to a guy who punches above his weight to Garrett Sexton early in his career, where he was just mauling players. Kevin Brown is that, but he's also 260 now, where, you know, you had a guy who was still transitioning from quarterback at this point in Garrett Sexton. There's a much higher threshold here of strength, power, that kind of process of layering of years and years and years of weightlifting, so that you're that really, really strong because you've been doing it for a while. He's got all of those traits, but he's somebody who early on I kind of felt like maybe was a little tight in the hips. Maybe he was good in a straight line, but I was concerned just kind of a little narrow in the hips. And that's not the case. Like, he has developed really well where he's athletic. He can turn. He's got good pass sets from a flexibility standpoint. So this is a guy who can be a complete left tackle, right tackle, whatever you want him to play at the college football level.
All right. Let's take a look at the other commitment from this past weekend, T. Frank. Jahzir Rogers from Delaware, wide receiver, 5'10", 170. But the trait that stands out, 4.3 speed.
Yeah, explosive in a lot of different ways. And Ryan Snyder chronicled this over at BlueWhiteIllustrated.com. I don't want to go into all of the details, but not just a speed guy. Because there's always this pendulum effect of swinging too far the other way, where Penn State has a lot of fast receivers in 23 that don't really work out. Like, the offense wasn't any good. So now it's like, speed is overrated. And it's like, no, speed is not overrated. It's important. Like, you can't stop trying to get fast football players. So the point being, you need more than speed to be a good football player. And Jahzir Rogers, admittedly, with these guys, their sophomore tape is kind of like watching toddlers at a certain point. Like, I'm joking here, obviously, but they're so early in their development. I remember the first comment I had about Cooper Cousins to Ryan Snyder was, man, those are some skinny legs for a guy his size. I'm not going to do a film analysis or a full game breakdown of somebody who is still so early in their development that for an offensive lineman who's now 325 pounds, that was the first thing I noticed, is he's got so much room to grow. There's not really a finished enough product here to make a determination. So I have not done a full dive on either of these guys. And Jahzir Rogers especially is a guy who was off most people's radar playing in Delaware. He's not ranked by any of the recruiting services at the moment, but the underlying metrics is Penn State found one early. This is a guy who is more than a speed player. I love his tape because he seems like he's a really aware route runner. He runs good routes. He's explosive in multiple directions. He's got a physicality to him when he's playing. So all of those things say that this is not a speed-only product from the highlight tape. But we'll see what that becomes his junior season. You could see a massive jump from a guy like Jahzir Rogers because he has those traits to do that.
And I think we got to remember, these guys are 15 or 16 years old, T. Frank.
Yeah.
They have a long way to go to become a finished product.
Yeah. And so, like, you know, that's why a lot of times junior season film is the bulk of what creates the final ish rankings or gets everybody in the final region that they're going to be in. But even then, there are guys who their junior to senior season, they're late developers. So they shoot up and you have a 5'10 receiver who's suddenly 6'1 and runs the same way. And then you have late risers as seniors into the final part of the recruiting process. So yeah, this is always an ongoing thing that's being continually reevaluated. But when you have the early indicators of a guy who has all of the traits you need, then you obviously want to prioritize those players in the recruiting process.
Yeah, I think you hit it. As a general rule, it's that junior season when you find out where a player stands. All right. I did want to ask you more about Max Granville. He is the defensive end from Texas, 6'3", 225, and he reclassified from class of 25 to class of 24. It gets a little confusing here. What this means is he showed up at Penn State already. He is there. He has shown up. Great news. Hey, whenever there's a guy from not in the area, you're always concerned about a decommitment. The local schools might go after him hot and heavy. But commitment, he has shown up at Penn State. What does that mean for him and for Penn State?
So I actually got a chance to interview him on Sunday night, which ran today on the Blue White Illustrated YouTube channel. We've had some exclusive content of that interview over the last couple of days, so I encourage you to go check it out, because I just asked him the exact question, and he is a really mature, aware player who he told me, you know, off camera, he's like, yeah, I'm 18. I'm ready to move out. Like, this was a decision that felt right for me. I want to, you know, strike out on my own. And he's deadly serious about being good at football. We had to talk about his intentions when he's playing, like even during his junior season. Why are you doing the things? He's not just trying to win. He's trying to do it the right way. So with he's developing his game, and that's why he's at Penn State. He's there to develop. So playing time, not playing time, that's not his point. He wants to get in and use all of the resources, from nutrition to the cold tub to the weight training program, so that next year, he said specifically his goals would be 235, lean muscle, gain 10 pounds of weight, and be ready to go and work with Deion Barnes this year to become a better football player and develop so that he has a fast track to being what he wants to be, which is a standout defensive end that is a complete player. Not just a guy who's a speed rusher, a guy who plays the run. He plays with physicality intentionally. He's a passionate kid, driven, motivated. So this is somebody who made these decisions because it was the right thing for those goals, not necessarily for playing time or, you know, getting to the NFL sooner. It's about being good at football, and then all of that other stuff will follow. So just a really... I think check out the interview. He is a really gregarious guy. He's comfortable on camera. He seems like he's a good young man. So it's somebody who, if this is going to work out, it's going to work out for a guy like that, who is really focused on doing those things and making that a part of the journey, not just getting in so that you can get in and get playing time. He's got the right goals in mind. And that is pretty apparent on his highlight film. And then talking to him confirmed that this is a guy who's all of those things from the maturity standpoint that you really want in football. And again, one of the wins in the class of 25 who turned down money to come to Penn State for those reasons, to develop here as a pass rusher.
And if the worst case scenario is he doesn't see the field at all this year, again, just this development time, so important.
Yeah.
That is it for our show. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership, with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.